Hey guys, welcome to episode 4 of the To Be Fit podcast. Today I am joined with another MNU student, Danny from Danny Boy Fitness over on his Instagram. How are you doing, Danny?
Hello mate, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm popping my podcast cherry with you. It's going to be good, excited.
I am truly honoured to be breaking you in, and I'll do it softly.
Yeah, be gentle.
Be gentle. Just to give the listeners a little bit of an idea of kind of your background as far as fitness is concerned, do you mind going into that for us, please?
Yeah, of course. So it's kind of cliche, but it's like a lot of people sort of 17, 18, started going to the gym, had absolutely no idea what I was doing. My source of kind of intel was Men's Health magazine, as it would have been for a lot of people back in the day. So weekly magazine, following the workouts, reading everything that it was in, that was in Men's Health, and just following, you know, what it told you to eat, how it told you to train. And it's just been kind of like an evolution for the last, where are we now? How old am I? Christ, 31. So 13, 14 years of just sort of just going with the kind of motions of what's kind of the topic of the moment. And the problem is I've kind of been there and done it with every single thing that we now kind of almost teach again. So whether it be paleo, clean eating, if it fits your macros, keto, intermittent fasting, at some point or another, I've done it, I've tried it, and I was kind of almost ashamed to say, but a zealot for all of them at one point or another. You know, I'd do paleo and it'd be like, paleo is the only way, it makes sense, you know, look at, you know, our ancestors, we should be eating like this. But looking back, you kind of realize, oh my god, what was I doing? Yeah. I had no idea. But it's been an evolution over 13 years, and I suppose within the last sort of 3 or 4 years, I've kind of come into the evidence-based side of things, started following Martin a little while ago, and just realized that there isn't a one-size-fits-all, there isn't a perfect diet, there isn't anything like that out there. Everybody's different, everybody's an individual, and one protocol for one person isn't going to necessarily be suitable for everyone. There is no kind of blanket subscription that we can give to everybody, because if there was, I think we would have found it and it would be kind of being implemented. But if it's not, you know, there's still a health crisis, there's still an obesity crisis. So yeah, it's been a bit of a weird journey, but sort of the last 3 or 4 years, things have sort of started to make a bit more sense to me.
Yeah, started to kind of connect the dots a little bit there.
Yeah, exactly.
So it was probably how long ago, 2, 3, 4 years ago when you started kind of getting a bit more interested in how can I really optimize that? What kind of, like, I don't know, spurred that on for you?
I think it was, I think what really got me into this, in kind of, as opposed to just being, I'll read a bit of Men's Health and go to the gym sort of recreationally, was listening to podcasts.
Right.
So back in the day, I think it was the first one I ever listened to was Ben Coomber's podcast.
Yeah.
And it was from listening to Ben's podcast and the guests that he would have on, say you'd have Phil Learney on, I'm like, oh, I really like the sound of this guy. So then I go and listen to Phil Learney's podcast, and it sort of spiderwebbed from there, and I'd start listening to more and more people. And just kind of took a nosedive head first into the fitness industry and following what all these different people were saying. And yeah, just from there, I think I first came across Martin about 3 years ago.
Who was good friends with Ben, yeah.
Yeah, and do you know what? When I first sort of discovered him when they were first starting to have issues.
Right.
And I actually really didn't like Martin. From what I could see, I thought, oh, look at this. This guy's arrogant. He thinks he knows everything. And I'm so ashamed to say that, because the guy has literally changed my life, because he's inspired me to completely change career and take a sort of head first dive into nutrition and do it as a job, which to make a career change at 31 is quite scary. I do wish that I discovered this 10 years ago, but I haven't. I've done it now, and it's a bit daunting, but I'm making a complete career change and going into nutrition sort of full time, and that is why I'm doing MNU, because it seems like the obvious choice.
So is this kind of your first qualification within the fitness industry?
It is, yeah. So I haven't actually got anything to compare it to. I know I've listened to your other podcasts with other MNU students, and some of them have done PN and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I haven't done that, so I've only got sort of anecdotally what I've heard other people say about these other courses. But it doesn't stop me from being quite certain when I talk to people about MNU and saying that it is absolutely incredible. It's absolutely amazing. Although I've got nothing to compare it to, I don't sort of have any issue with sort of standing in there and singing its praises as much as I do.
Yeah, and I think so far with MNU, it's just kind of reinforced kind of what I, without sounding arrogant, a lot of what I already know, you know. And obviously, there's been things that I've learned, but it's quite, you know, quite nice to hear that. Oh, actually, I am half decent, and I think that's what a lot of people do struggle with is just the confidence of like having a platform and actually seeing stuff from it, which kind of like your Instagram, Danny, it's Danny at Danny underscore boy fit underscore fitness. Yeah,
That's it, yeah, at Danny underscore boy underscore fitness.
that's a mouthful.
Yeah, sorry, I couldn't have made it more simpler. That was a, I mean, that was a kind of another thing that's inspired me to sort of go into this full time because, can I just talk about how that kind of
No,
came into
absolutely.
fruition?
Yeah.
So I had an Instagram account. I mean, a year and a half, 2 years ago, I hated Instagram. I never used it, and the whole hashtag thing really irritated me. I thought, what is this hashtag thing? People saying like hashtag fit fam and all this, and I didn't get it at all. And I had a personal Instagram account that I created, but I never used. I never did anything with it. I literally made the account and then left it because I wasn't interested. And I sort of over the last few years have just got so fed up with seeing friends, family, colleagues, and just general population so confused about health and fitness, whether that be confusion from what they're reading on magazine covers, whether it be clickbait articles on the internet, or some zealot on Instagram that's, you know, proclaiming about keto being the only diet that anybody should ever do. And the general population, it's very easy for us to say, well, we know that's wrong because of this, or we know that's wrong because of this, but general population don't necessarily know that stuff, and it's very easy for them to get sucked in because people are desperate. We're in an obesity crisis, a health crisis, and people are desperate for change and for answers, and they're getting promised quick fixes and quick results with all of these, you know, detox 30-day cleanse, lose 15 stone in an hour bullshit, and people are just getting sucked in by it. And I got so fed up with seeing and hearing friends, colleagues, and just general people getting confused by this stuff. I thought, why don't I go and sort of help by just trying to clear up some of the confusion? And that's why I went back onto Instagram. And I thought, well, I've got a dormant Instagram account with nothing on it, so why not turn that into kind of like a fitness thing? Just go on there and put a couple of little posts up saying that, you know, starvation mode doesn't exist, and you know, you don't have to eat every 2 hours to boost your metabolism. And it has honestly just been a snowball. I mean, I started posting on there end of January, beginning of February this year. So it's been 7 or 8 months now, and it's just sort of grown. I mean, I haven't got 500 million followers, but it's been sort of slow and steady organic growth. And the more people I kind of reach, and the more people message me and go, you know, your stuff's really helpful, it's just cleared up so much confusion for me. It's almost become an addiction, and I've become addicted to helping people and just, you know, clearing up so much of the noise that's out there. Because the thing is as well, I don't make any money from it. It's not a business
No.
yet, and it's not something that I profit from. So everything I do on there, all the advice that I give, all the conversations I have with people over DMs who ask for my help, is all my own personal time. It's all my own free time. I've, you know, not made a penny out of it. But I just can't help people, because it's so nice to sort of see someone sit there and say, do you know what? 6 months ago, I bought into all this. I was doing the skinny coffee club. I was drinking green tea to talk body fat, and I was eating every 2 hours, and all this stuff that people are confused by. I now realize that I don't have to avoid my favorite foods. I can be flexible with my diet. I can skip breakfast if I'm not hungry. And just to see that I've helped just one person makes it all worthwhile. So it's kind of snowballed really over the last. I'm just kind of addicted in a sense to just making it grow and grow and helping as many and reaching as many people as possible.
Brilliant. And that's something that I kind of struggle with is probably the social media side, and it's probably because I'm just not consistent. I posted last week about, the podcast with James, and I'd realized that had been a week since I'd actually posted, and the one prior to that was about the podcast. And I think, would that be your advice to people about the consistency and the growth correlating?
Yeah, consistency. I mean, I don't know whether, because Instagram has obviously got its algorithms, and everybody's trying to crack that, and we don't know how it works. It's just, sometimes I'll put a post up, I'll write a post and I think, this is a really good post, I think this will be really well received, and I post it and nothing happens, and I'm like, it's just fallen flat. And then I'll just post something flippant and it goes crazy, and I get 50 comments and 200 likes, and it's like, well, where did that come from? So I've given up trying to crack the algorithm, because it's something that we don't know about. But with regards to consistency, not necessarily that you have to post like every day consistently, but just put out good content, just keep on top of it. You don't have to post every day, but yeah, I think consistency is key. And everybody I've spoken to, I speak to a lot of people who have got big accounts, and say to them, what advice for sort of growing an organic following? And they say, just be consistent, just put out good content, and it does just snowball, because it's kind of like the whole, I don't know if you ever saw at school, the bunny rabbit thing. You start off with two rabbits, they multiply, and within 10 minutes, you've got 500,000 rabbits. It's kind of like that. Like when you've got a small account, it grows very slowly, but the bigger it gets, it snowballs. Yes. So I do think it's just about patience, consistency, and most importantly, putting out good content. I personally, and it does take a lot of time, and I wouldn't expect everyone would have time to do this, but I will respond to every message and every comment, just because I feel obliged to. Like I said, I don't make any money out of it, but if someone messages me asking me for help, I'll either help them, or if I don't know the answer, refer them on to someone that I think can help them. So,
yeah, and I think, to be fair, probably one of the common things that I've seen amongst everybody so far on MNU are, they're willing to give up the time, they're willing to invest in, they're willing to accept that they don't know anything, they're not dogmatic, there's no zealots there. And, week one, we were told to put our biases out on the kind of floor, really.
Yeah, it goes back to what Martin said about being evidence-based is not going to be as profitable, unfortunately, as doing it the other way. But I value the integrity side of things, as I'm sure everybody on MNU does. And it's one of those kind of big things that seems to have stuck out to me, is that just the word integrity. And I've realised more and more, do you know what, that is an absolute core principle. You can know as much as you want about carbohydrates, you can know everything about creatine, you can know everything about the Krebs cycle, but knowledge is only sort of so, it can take you so far if you haven't got integrity, because the industry is just so full of people that have sold out, because it's very easy to make money in this industry, because all you've got to do is come up with some sort of gimmick that promises quick results, market it correctly, and you will get buy-in from people, because they're desperate and they're vulnerable. And I just think it's such a scummy thing to do, but people are doing it with these stupid fucking products that they're putting out, promising quick results.
Do you think they genuinely think they're helping people, or think they know what they're doing?
I think that would depend. That we'd have to answer that on a case by case basis. But I think there's certainly some out there are just generally ripping people off. They know full well, whether it be they kind of know it from the off, as in that's their intention. Okay, do you know what? I'm a bit short of cash. I'm going to come up with this product just to con people. Or whether it's I'm releasing this product or this protocol, this diet, in the back of my mind, I know that it's probably not got a lot of integrity behind it, but it's going to make me a lot of money. Or whether they are just genuinely blinded, because the other issue we've got in the industry is zealots. And I think the problem with zealots is that they genuinely believe what they're saying and what they're doing, but they're just blind, almost blind to the truth, so to speak. So they will have their protocol, their diet or their principle, and they will follow it, But when you speak to them, they genuinely believe it. They genuinely believe that they close their ears to any kind of other opinions or any other evidence that goes against what they're sort of selling, and they follow it blindly. And I think that's another issue we've got, is because it's almost like these people can't be taught.
Yeah.
And that makes it slightly tricky when you've got someone that's not sort of, they've just got their hands over their ears and their eyes shut, so to speak.
Could you be told when you were paleo? Or
no, it's, and that's what my wife always reminds me of. She says it's all very well saying you're evidence based now and that you know that you were wrong back in the day, but you couldn't be told back in the day. The old you would not have been told that paleo is not necessarily right, or intermittent fasting isn't necessarily the best thing since sliced bread. And it's, that sort of begs the question, okay, well, so what made you change? What, at what point did you open your ears and start sort of opening your mind to other ideas and other things? And I don't actually know the answer. I think it's just been just general evolution of my own personal character, just following the journey and opening my mind to new things and realizing, and through trial and error as well, because as much as I say I did paleo, it didn't last forever because I'm not doing it now. At some point it failed and I realized, you know what, maybe this isn't something I can sustain for the rest of my life. So maybe through trial and error a little bit.
Yeah, I think maybe through personally, like when you've been to an extreme, you can kind of realize how unextreme you can be. And I, you know, being, having a past in bodybuilding, you know, it's a very extreme thing, and clean eating, fasted this, and you know, and like then it went up to the other end of the spectrum with if it fits your macros and HIIT cardio and almost going with trends that are in the fitness industry.
You know, absolutely.
I was the worst flexible diet in the world. I had no flexibility.
I mean, that touches on this week's stuff on health that we've done on MNU, because people kind of look at health as just what they eat and, you know, having a clean diet, lots of fruit and vegetables. But I'd heard Martin touch on the MNU mantra of health before, so I was kind of aware of it anyway. But going sort of into it in depth this week, it really just makes so much sense when you look at all the other facets. It's not just about being physically healthy. There's the social aspect, there's the economic aspect, because economic, for example, at some point I became a very kind of zealot like for organic. And I believe that organic was the answer, and, you know, everything had to be organic. If it was available in organic form, I would buy it. And it fucking crippled me, mate. I mean, my shopping bill was an extra £200 a month. And at one point I just had to stop and say, it's crippling me financially. As much as I might think it's healthier to be eating this much organic food, we've got to take into account the economic side of things. It's crippling my bank balance, and I'm not in a healthy financial situation. So it's really been interesting looking at the kind of other facets that are around health apart from just what you eat.
Yeah. And that's been this week's kind of, course module has been on the subject of health. So it's kind of, although we might be going a little bit down rabbit holes about areas of the fitness industry, it all comes down to these kind of six components of health that we've been talking about this week.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, did you want to touch on them?
We can talk about what they are, you know. So you've got the social aspect, the physical aspect, psychological, intellectual, economic, and then the emotional or spiritual side of kind of health, which obviously nutritional choices and your exercise habits are going to massively influence. And the first kind of rule is, you know, as a practitioner, is to do no harm.
Yeah, it's I think social is a big one that kind of stands out to me, because you see so many people when they're trying to lose weight, one of the first things they kind of are very quick to put in the bin is their social life. I'm on a diet. I can't go out at the weekend. Or they go out and they just drink tap water and they don't have a meal, or they take their Tupperware. And although their kind of heart is in the right place, you have to look at whether that's sort of emotionally and psychologically beneficial for them to be doing that. Obviously, it depends on the circumstances. If you've got someone that's doing a bodybuilding prep and they've got a show in 4 weeks' time, it's probably not necessarily a good idea to tell them, okay, on that one night out, go out, do what you want, you know, relax, don't worry about your diet, because, you know, for them, they're competing against the best of the best and every calorie is going to count. But General Jane, who's got 15 stone to lose and she's got an indefinite amount of time to lose it, there's not kind of that time restraint. Is it going to be healthy for her for the next year of her life to never go out, never see her friends, never have a social occasion? And how long as well before that restriction on your social life and avoiding a drink with a friend or some birthday cake at a birthday party, how long until that restriction implodes and you just go on an all-out binge because you've been so tight on yourself with regards to that stuff? And again, that ties into the emotional side and the psychological side. And it's interesting how when you talk about it like that, they all kind of tie in together in one way, shape or form.
Oh, most definitely. I get the odd message from a client when one of her friends has done a 4 week transformation or an 8 week transformation. And, you know, I just kind of go, I'm to the point now and I'm like, and what, you know, these people who do these transformations, it's, you know, they're going to be singing and dancing when they've made this change. However, what's the longevity of that really? And what's kind of almost been sacrificed in order to do that?
Yeah, I said this the other day on a post. The images that you see on social media, you know, these photo shoots and these Instagram models in their bikinis and stuff. I said, the pictures that you see on social media is just that. It's just a picture. You can't see what's going on behind that lens. You can't see that person's life story, their psychology, the emotion that they've got behind there. Because I guarantee you, a lot of these images that you see, people will look at them and say, oh God, look at her. She's got an amazing physique. Look at him. Look at his six pack. But I promise you, in a lot of these cases, they're hiding emotional issues. They're hiding eating disorders. They're hiding psychological issues. So what you see isn't what you get necessarily on social media. And that's all it is. It's a picture or a video clip, but it doesn't explain the story behind that. Yeah. And I think people are quite quick to forget that as well.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people who undergo these, they want not necessarily a physical transformation, but a kind of life transformation.
Yeah, and it doesn't always deliver. The amount of people that I've spoken to that have undergone those sort of transformations, like you say, and they've got to the end, and you say to them, you know, back at the start, the physique that you've got now after completing this transformation, that was what you were dreaming of getting. That's how you wanted to look. That was your kind of dream. How do you feel now you've got it? And a lot of people say, well, it's not quite what I was expecting. Whether they were expecting to sort of just be happier or feel a sense of kind of fulfillment or achievement. But a lot of the time, it doesn't tick the boxes that they think it did. Yeah, they look great. Obviously, context dependent, how, you know, what we're talking about, specific situations. But has it wrecked them emotionally? Has it wrecked their hormones because they've got so shredded, they've lost all their sex drive, you know, and therefore put a detriment on their relationship? It doesn't always live up to expectations. I've heard that so many times from people.
And it's the same, you know, I think Lynn Norton in particular, he always talks about the success of diets, and pretty much, you know, one of the statistics he always goes on is like by 3 years, 95% of people put the weight back on, if not more, which gives a 5% success rate. And I just think it's a lack of longevity, like big picture thinking on most people's behalf.
I mean, when you look at those figures, it's quite frightening, really, that's what we're up against.
Yeah. I mean, it makes people think, well, what's the point? And exactly, obviously, this is the idea of these podcasts and our Instagrams and social media. Like, there's so much shit out there, and in our eyes, it probably doesn't seem that way because we follow like each other and everybody that's evidence based. However, like you say, General Jane doesn't. She probably follows, the body coach and all of these kind of people that are telling them what they want, not necessarily what we're doing, which is telling them maybe what they need, whether they choose to believe that or not.
Yeah, and I think sometimes it can feel like a you're fighting a losing battle because although we know what we are offering is a kind of more long-term and realistic option for long-term success, they don't want to hear that when they've got Boombod telling them that, hang on, well, Danny Boy Fitness might be telling you that if you give him 2 years of your life, he'll transform you for the rest of your life. But I'm over here telling you I can do it in 3 days. So what they're going to choose? They're going to choose the stuff that they see all their friends doing, their colleagues in the office doing, and Sandra who's come in and she did Boombod and she lost 3 stone in a week. That's what they're surrounded by. That's their environment, and they kind of just follow each other blindly because they've seen it work for someone else, so it must work for them. And on an individual basis as well, sort of rebuying back into diets that you've done before that have failed you, like Slimming World. People do Slimming World, they lose weight, eventually taper off, put the weight back on. Then when they get tired, they decide they want to lose weight again. Oh, well, Slimming World worked for me before, so I'm going to give that another try. And it's just that cycle of going round and round and not realizing that it didn't actually work because it gave you no exit strategy. It gave you no long-term plan on how to sustain your weight loss. And I think that's the thing that's missing the most is all these diets work, Herbalife will work, Skinny Coffee Club will work, SlimFast, Slimming World, they all work, but they don't empower people. They don't give people an exit strategy, and they don't give people any kind of idea how to sustain their weight loss over the long term.
Yeah,
And
and
I think that's one of the biggest problems.
I think one of the posts that you've done probably in the last week or so was talking about, the analogy of would you go back with your ex-partner, and comparing it to your diet, and it just kind of makes so much sense. There's a reason why that relationship didn't work. There's a reason why that diet didn't work in the long run. And people do say it to me, "Oh, I'm going back to." On this diet, it worked the last time, and I'm like, oh. It gets to the point you get a little bit tired of saying it, and you just have to let people make the mistake maybe two or three times even before they start coming. Like yourself and myself, we came round to this evidence-based approach.
It's frustrating because you kind of, in our position, we just want people to listen now. We don't want to see them go through the cycle again and again and sort of come to it on their own fruition. We want to grab hold of them, shake them, and get rid of all these bad ideas and these kind of concepts of what they think is the way to success. And we want them to be ready to do it the right way now. But it has to come from within. It doesn't matter what you say to someone, if they're not ready internally to change, the amount of sort of external factors you can throw at them are just going to bounce off without any kind of impact. It's got to come from within the person, and they have to be ready to make that change. And unfortunately, that can take time and time and time again on the same diet, or years and years and years of going around in circles. It's just frustrating that we can't kind of persuade people more easily, unfortunately.
I find personally, because I do currently work in this industry, that when I am working with people, they get frustrated because they're inundated with what's obviously happening around them, transformation photos, and obviously their past experience. Maybe they have done a diet where they've seen like massive reductions in weight, not necessarily fat, very quickly. And it's almost trying to kind of, this is why I, ask my clients to go and follow other like people within the industry on their social media and, get rid of all of the shite that basically make them second guess themselves.
I mean, point you said there sort of rings true is the whole initial rapid weight loss that people get on these diets. And a lot of people think and believe that they're losing fat. They'll go on a shake diet and in the first week they've lost a stone and a half. We know that's not fat. We know it's a lot of water, etc. But to them, it just looks like a massive, massive success.
Yeah.
And it gets that buy-in to that product and that diet. And it's very difficult because how do you educate them? Do you teach people about glycogen and carbohydrate storage and that sort of thing? General Jane and general public aren't necessarily going to want to listen to that and hear that. So it's tricky because they do sort of have this initial success a lot with these diets because of the water weight that they lose initially. That's something that I see time and time again.
Yeah, I mean the way I get around that is purely with daily weigh-ins. I find that I know that it's a very client dependent thing because I know the scales is quite a kind of controversial subject. Yes, they really are meaningless to a certain degree, but I want to show people how meaningless they are, in particular women, from a day-to-day basis. Like for them to like my question is, did you eat, in excess of your maintenance calories, like 3,500 calories, if say for example that is the equivalent of a pound of body fat, and so that would mean they would have nigh on 8,000 to 6,000 calories, yesterday, and the answer is usually no. So I'm like, well, obviously you haven't put body fat on, and they start, getting a little bit more clued up, and as the process goes on, they when there is these spikes in their weight. They can correlate it with, I've just come on my period, or I had a high sodium, high carbohydrate meal last night, or I slept like shit, or I'm going through stress. And we teach them that. I think these weekly weigh-ins, especially like Slimming World at 8 o'clock on a night, it's just kind of like throwing a dart with a blindfold on a
Absolutely.
roundabout. It's just crazy.
Yeah, don't get me started on Slimming World. I think it comes back to the intellectual thing that we sort of discussed on the MNU mantra
Yeah.
is once you've got a client as an evidence-based coach, you can do, like you said, you can educate them, and it's about empowering these people so that at some point when they don't need you anymore, they can go off into the world, but they know all the stuff that they need to know in order to sort of maintain their success. Like they know the limitations of the scales, they know how it will fluctuate based on, how much they've eaten, whether they're during their period, whether how much carbohydrates, the sodium they've had, etc. Whereas all these other diets don't do that. They just, like Slimming World, for example, fucking stupid weigh-ins. And I've seen some atrocious things. I saw something the other day about a Slimming World client who strips naked at their weigh-in because they were so desperate to have a loss. And I mean, surely that rings alarm bells that people are going to that sort of desperation in a slimming club in front of other people, stripping off naked in order to try and lose as much weight as possible. And it comes down to that overemphasis on the scales that Slimming World sort of promote, without any sense of, well, it might be slightly higher this week because of this, or you might have not lost weight because of this. There's none of that. It's you've either lost or you haven't, and
Yeah.
you're either scowled upon or kind of praised for losing some weight.
And I know people who feel a sense of shame if they've even gone away maybe on holiday and they come back weighing a bit more. They're like, they'll not go back because the fear of getting in front of many people and being weird and obviously having to maybe interact with regard, I don't know how it works, so I don't know whether the it is like a Marjorie Daws Little Britain, where the where she like basically calls them out, or whether it's a bit more private, but still, a friends, the support network, if you'd like, are going to ask, oh, how did you do this week?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure it is like you said. It is like everybody sits there one by one. They get up and they get weighed in front of, and it's kind of proclaimed to the rest of the group. Oh, she's put on a pound. She's maintained. Unless you choose to think, I think they call it a blind weigh-in. So if that person chooses to get weighed and have their weight written down in their book, but they don't want to know what the result was, they can have what's called a blind weigh-in, so they won't hear the result. But otherwise, I think it is put out to the whole group. And it's one of the positives of Slimming World and Slimming Clubs is the group
Yeah.
network and the support mechanism. But in that case, we can see how it can become a detriment because you've got that kind of pressure. If you don't lose weight doing a diet sort of solo on your own, the only person you've got to sort of see that as yourself, but doing it in front of a club and feeling like you've let your, not only yourself but other members down is not necessarily a good thing.
I think it's just the kind of the culture. I mean, idiots and, you know, clever people tend to group together and kind of support one another's bullshit.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
It's kind of what, you know, the MNU guys are doing. We're all supporting one another's, you know, what we're doing.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
sorry, go on.
It's the evidence-based family thing, isn't it? And I think it has to be done, because we're all, like you said, it comes down to the integrity thing. You know, we're not, I don't see it as competition. You know, you've got companies out there that see other slimming companies as competition. Their aim is to make money. Their aim is to sort of make as much money out of people as possible and run a successful business. But personally, and I'm sure it's the same for everyone else, with regards to what we do and evidence-based practice, I don't see everybody else as any sort of competition. I see them as my peers. And if a client wants to go to them rather than me, if I know that they're evidence-based and they've got integrity, no issue whatsoever. I don't care that I've lost X amount of money for them going elsewhere. If I know they're being dealt with by a good coach who follows the same principles as me, then happy days.
Yeah, and I think it sometimes does come down to the financial aspect as well, because although I would say I do charge more than a lot of the local personal trainers and coaches in the area, I would probably say I'm better. And also, I'd be uncomfortable off the top of my head referring anybody anywhere local. And that's not to be horrible. There's just, it's very, especially in the northeast of England, like, you know, it's very sparse of any actual good evidence-based practitioners.
Yeah. I mean, I'm down in southeast London, so obviously London's very, very dense. So there's a lot of people here, but there's a lot of good people. But unfortunately, that also brings with it a lot of bad people as well, especially uptown. And these people that run really, really successful businesses, charging clients absolutely biblical amounts of money because they've got like an office in Harley Street, but just selling absolute pseudoscience, like what we've seen this week, the whole kind of nutrigenetics and genomics and basing people's diets around their genetics. We know it's still a very early, it's an area in its infancy, and yeah, and there's a lot more work to be done before we can sort of, you know, truly say, okay, we can recommend this supplement or this diet protocol based on, you know, this thing we found in your genetics, in your blood test. But these people are out there. I ran something through Google in relation to this week's lecture, and the amount of these companies that popped up selling diets and supplements and stuff based on people's genetics was mental, absolutely mental. And I was just like, man, this is it. This is the problem that we've got, and that's what we're kind of up against.
You know, this is DNA testing bullshit.
Yeah, yeah. For every kind of new thing that sort of comes up as an interesting area of research, you're going to get charlatans latching onto it and trying to make money from it. Like I said earlier, whether they genuinely believe what they're doing is right, as evidence-based, we know that there's a lot more work to be done in that area before we can truly sort of start recommending stuff. But
I think
it's always going to be there.
Yeah, I think in the lecture, you know, that we're talking about this FDO gene, I can't remember the full name of it, which makes people maybe a little bit more genetically prone to obesity. You know, as a practitioner, if we found they had this gene, how would that change our practice? You know, would we not be telling them to eat protein and fruits and vegetables in the first place and to manage stress and sleep and all of that? So it's, you know, like quite often, like just a pointless thing, like, and I think to a certain degree, like somebody in the general public would absolutely love to hear they've got this FTO gene if they're struggling with weight. You know, it's so disempowering to an effect that they're like, yeah, I've got me as the kind of piling a McDonald's into them.
Yeah,
and that's how it's my genetics.
It's people. People are always going to look for an explanation and an easy answer, whether that be an easy solution like these 30-day detoxes or whether it be an easy excuse. And the problem with the FTO gene, as much as it's fascinating from a kind of research perspective and from our point of view, it's potentially quite dangerous as something to throw out into sort of mainstream media because, like you said, people that struggle with their weight are going to read that and go, "I must have that. I'm fucked. There's nothing I can do. So I might as well just sit back, like you said, pile in the McDonald's and not do anything about it." But we know that. Yeah, it's a gene that exists, but it doesn't. It's like Martin says, it's not your destiny. It can still be. We can still work around things, and you can still lose weight. It just might make your situation slightly more tricky, but it doesn't mean it can't be done.
Yeah, and I think like this like talking about genetics, like they are what they are, and typically these people are comparing themselves are in the I call them the 1% club.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm never going to be the world natural bodybuilding champion, but that doesn't change anything just because of my genetics. I'm not going to stop enjoying training and be as cheesy as this sounds, be the best version of me I could possibly be.
Yeah, well, that's it. Is that something else I put out a little while ago? Was your competition ultimately is what you're looking at in the mirror? You can't necessarily compare yourself to what you see on social media, to what you see in the gym, because as much as I used to do it, it's not realistic. I might go to the gym and look at the guy in the squat rack next to me who's squatting, 300, 400 kilos, and think, God, I wish I could do that. I want to be like that, but I'm 6 foot 7. My limb lengths are not. I'm not built for lifting. I'm at a slight disadvantage with stuff like that, and I'm just and naturally, I'm not a strong man. I'm never going to be able to do that. I struggle to lift more than 100 kilos, as pants as it sounds. But do you know what? I go in and I add 5 kilos from last month. I've beaten what I can do and what I'm capable of. It's not about looking at everybody else as your competition necessarily, but trying to be, like you said, the best version of you.
Yeah, and I think the longer you're in this industry, the longer term you really start to think.
Yeah,
And I see
absolutely.
other people like, one that springs to mind, Jeff Albert from 3DMJ, and he's, I think in his 50s now, and he's an absolute unit. Like, he's just been
Yeah.
training, he's not stopped, and like I don't consider stopping. And I think
Yeah,
like
do you know
it's,
what? I
yeah, sorry, go on.
sorry, I completely agree. Like, one of my kind of things, people say, well, what's the point in what you do? What's your long-term goal? And I kind of say, well, just to keep going. I aim to sort of still be doing this when I'm 50, 60, 70. At some point, I'm going to have to stop. I can't be going in at 95 years old and bench pressing if I live that long. But it's something I enjoy and we know is massively beneficial for health. So why not just keep pushing, just keep going, keep living the best version of you.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've taken on, for some reason, a little flurry of more elderly clients, and like these are people who have backgrounds in poor dietary habits, and getting them into the gym and stuff like that, lifting weights and teaching them about energy balance and protein, and really empowering these people to like improve their health is huge. And it's so like it doesn't matter whether you're in your 30s or your 60s, it's certainly not too late to kind of go, right, this isn't working, there's something not right, let's kind of maybe do a more thorough and better job.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you're talking about older clients, I think they can be very stubborn to sort of take on advice, especially when they look at people like us. Although we consider, well, I certainly consider myself to be getting old now. If you're sort of taking on a 60, 70-year-old, they're still going to look at us as, why should I listen to them? They're the same age as my grandson. It can be difficult to kind of get them to listen. My mum is a perfect example. She's so kind of set in her ways, and if it's in the Daily Mail, it is gospel, and it's so difficult, because she'll come around and she'll say, "Oh, I read this in the Daily Mail, and it said this and this, and Diet Coke's going to kill us," and it's very difficult, even if you come at it very from a reasoned, evidence-based perspective, to sometimes get people of that age bracket to listen, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, I don't talk to my parents about nutrition at all, ever. But yeah, to be fair, because like especially when I was competing, you know, like and doing photo shoots, if I went for a Sunday lunch, I would kind of, you know, kind of wait out to a certain degree. And again, this kind of touches on, you know, the six facets of health. I know fine well, like, I was in a particular time within my diet, because for me, there is, when I'm doing that, a before and after, and then I will gravitate back to normal. You know, there's a very specific reason I'm doing that. Whereas now, most people are starting off at the other end of the spectrum, and they're going to very harsh extremes just to try and get into that normal weight range. You know, so like, that isn't healthy to a certain degree, but, you know, my social circle, you know, my career, if you'd like, as well, ties very well into what I had, what I was specifically trying to do.
Yeah, and if you're aware of it as well, it's when people aren't aware that necessarily what they're doing is detrimental, that it can be a problem. But if you can put eyes on yourself and what you're doing and say, I know for such and such person what I'm doing isn't necessarily going to be a good idea, but for me this is what I'm doing it for, these are my goals, this is my objective, and I know that at some point it's going to end and I'm going to go back to, like you said, normality, then it's not an issue because you're more aware of it.
We put it this way: prep one, my pure bro prep. I was going around for Sunday lunch, and I was having tuna, rice, and broccoli while everyone was pouring gravy over there, you know, Yorkshire puddings and roast tatties and that.
Ouch. If it fits your clean macros,
Well, that
that's
was when I
amazing.
first was introduced to the concept of macros. However, I was only given, I think, about eight foods I could fit within them. You know, and I did it because that's the sort of kind of, I mean, from a bodybuilder's perspective, you've got to be a little bit kind of obsessive, and it's kind of taken me a long time to be able to kind of come away from that. And it's, you know, like yourself, I started listening to kind of podcasts a few years ago, and that's really when I started being introduced to more critical thinking, I would have. And evidence-based sort of stuff, because even early on in my podcast listening days, I was very quick to jump on things. Hence, I did the PN course. It was like, the PN course is great, and I was like, right, go buy that. And did it, even though I didn't realize that PN course tied in very much with that person's bias at the time. And like, I look back now and think, I can see why. So it's being able to take a step back and be able to ask some questions and think objectively, critically, and it's taken me lots of years of practice to almost self-coach, and that's kind of what we do as practitioners, and you know, through our content, is to make people question things, question us, ask us.
That's one thing that surprises me is how little bite back I get on Instagram, considering the amount of sort of diets and protocols that I call out on a regular basis. You would expect that I get a lot of backlash. Maybe it's going to come like a tidal wave at some point, but I get very few people actually sort of challenging what I say. And like you said, I'm sitting there ready to answer questions if people want to disagree with what I'm saying. I'm more than up for a debate, but unfortunately, I don't tend to get a lot of backlash. I just get people sort of going, "Oh, that's cool. Thanks for clearing that one up," which is a shame, really, because I like a good debate, but.
I'm not one to kind of like jump on people's statuses, and because you'd be on forever, wouldn't you? Like, you know, this is bullshit, this is bullshit. If I get tagged in by something, by a client, and they tag us, "What do you think of this?" I might just put bullshit with no context, and I think it's funny you're not leaving any. Because it really winds them all. Just, you know, like, it's a waste of my time. What's the point? You're never going to convince an idiot. And if somebody is happy, and I think it was a Danny Lennon podcast, and they were talking about, like, you know, just discussing things from like a common ground, that, you know, we're trying to get the right answer, not prove who's right. You know, and I think like, this is the thing that people struggle with diets, is like, what is the right answer?
Unfortunately, that's the problem, is people are looking for an answer, like a one size fits all, and it doesn't exist because everybody's got a different time frame, a different amount of weight to lose, different health issues, different lifestyle, and it comes down to that kind of individualizing things and not doing a cookie cutter approach, because it's not going to work. It's not going to work because everybody needs to be sort of looked at on an individual basis and their circumstances and what's going to be optimal for them.
Yeah, I mean, if they're like obviously limited in the first place by them kind of six components of health, let's say their job requires them to be very social, or they're poor, they can't afford like things, I think you've just got to kind of take them as a foundation and work from there and build from there, as opposed to what these shitty transformation programs do is kind of just flip people's worlds upside down. And it's like, yes, this is why you lost weight. We know fundamentally this, but what's going to happen? If there's any indication during that process that you hate it, you can't wait to do certain things after, it's like just maybe question that process and whether it's going to, be more detrimental in the long run.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with that.
I'm thinking about your status the other day, like with the X's analogy. I think the more time you have had a bad egg, like especially within the relationship, you're a little bit more guarded and it takes a bit longer to actually like commit again. Like, it must be psychologically hard to have to die it again and again and again.
That analogy fits really, really well. I was really pleased when I sort of put that out there, because even in the context of, like you just said, of the more times you've kind of been with that person, your guard is going to be up for when you meet someone new. And it's the same with diets. If you've done Slimming World 8 times and it's let you down time and time again, your willingness
Relationship,
to kind
yeah.
of dive, yeah, your willingness to dive in with a new diet with, say, you as a coach, you're going to be a bit guarded. You're going to be a bit reserved and think, well, Slimming World's let me down 8 times. Why should I believe you? Kind of thing.
I think many people still kind of like obviously look at whatever information was presented them and still have like a little bit misguided concepts around it. This well very much myth buster now, like starvation mode, eating after a certain time, carbohydrates in general, like fasted this and all of that. They learned a kind of a method, but they've never actually like questioned its practical application in the longevity of their life.
No, I completely agree.
Yeah. So like obviously I'm just conscious of time. We've been going, oh, 52 minutes. So we'll start like work after. To be fair, probably in the future we'll have another bit of crack on if you're happy to do that down the line. But
Yeah, no, definitely, mate. 100%. I've enjoyed it. I'd love to come back on.
so I'll have to do an Instagram live with you. We'll have to get on that one day. But like, so what's the kind of, what do you see yourself doing within this industry? How do you feel you're going to make an impact? What's the plan?
That is a very good question. I'm kind of bouncing between several ideas. Some things kind of appeal to me. Like, I'm very interested in dealing with sort of clinical issues like PCOS and stuff like that. But then I kind of, you look at the sort of size of the obesity epidemic, and I can't help but kind of be inspired to go more for the weight loss side of things, because that is going to have a knock-on effect with clinical issues like diabetes, PCOS, etc. A lot of these things are impacted by people losing weight. So I think at the moment is coming up with some kind of weight loss business. I'm not entirely sure. It's kind of watch this space at the moment, but there will be something in the form of a nutrition related business in this next sort of year or so, hopefully. So watch this space.
Oh, brilliant. And I think as far, like you said, as far as actual losing weight, that will just have a knock-on effect with what is costing the NHS billions at the moment.
Yeah.
Brilliant. I mean, is there anywhere people can obviously go and look at your stuff? We have Instagram if you want to tell people the
Yes.
handle.
Yeah. So it's yeah, my main kind of outlet is through my Instagram. So it's at Danny DAMMY underscore boy underscore fitness. That is where you can check out my stuff, get in contact with me if need be, and give me a follow. But that is my main outlet if people want to check me out.
Yeah, if you like a combination of myth busting and The Simpsons, this is the place to go.
I don't know where the Simpsons thing came from, to be honest.
There
I'm not
seems to
even
be
a
a
massive,
theme, yeah.
yeah, I'm not even a massive Simpsons fan. I just created one post with a Homer Simpson meme, and I just really like the style of it, and that just became that was my kind of style. So I've just kind of I feel like I've created an image
Yeah.
for my posts now, and I kind of just want to stick to it.
I think familiarity's massively.
Yeah.
If you're chopping and changing, I find this, and this is something Martin's spoke about, people that seemingly are almost jumping from the next trend, and all of a sudden they are talking about calories and not hormones, and it's very like kind of transparent. But yeah, that's great, man. I just want to say a big thank you, then, Danny, for giving us your time. And hopefully, we'll get some people. I've got actually next week is check-in week. That's right, isn't it?
That's it, yeah.
So I've got a woman. I've got Shannon on next week, and she's actually was already qualified Mac Nutrition. So I thought it might be a cool idea during these check-in weeks to bring a previous student on and talk about kind of what they've went on and done afterwards.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Right.
It's been a pleasure, mate. I've really enjoyed it. I'd love to come back on at some point.
Brilliant, man. Thank you very much. And hopefully, we'll meet at one of the graduations.
Yes, absolutely. Look
Right,
forward to it.
man. I'll just hang up and then we'll have a big crack after, mate. Oh, where's my. There.